Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And of course, it's Monday evening, so it's rant time. Hi Edwin, how are you doing?
Martin. It's we're on the home straight. Buy my vote and much more. I'm all excited. I just want to know what all the goodies are and who's going to give them to me so they can buy my vote. At the moment, I've got one of the independents, with a nose in front, but it's still another 5 days to go.
I know, it amazes me what they roll out. Just remember, this is taxpayers' money we're talking about, right? So it's not their own money. They're basically redistributing taxpayers' money to particular targets to try and influence people to vote for them. What's wrong with that, eh?
Hey, listen, if I get some rich man's tax money and they get my squiddlies, who cares? They're really worried.
It's the beauty of the political system and the beauty of the way that our economics work, right? Except, I must say that if you look over the last 3 years, the bulk of the money's gone to the top end of town. Think about JobKeeper and how many large firms kept the JobKeeper they never needed in the first place, right? Whereas the small end of town didn't get anything like as much. So there's already redistribution afoot that I have some suspicion about. And then, of course, the transport sector are grizzling about lack of subsidies. Can you believe it?
Well, look, I think you've got to ask yourself the question, Martin. Is this the nail that really seals the Liberal Party's coffin and we put them to rest? Has petrol gone up again above the $2, but now we've also got the trucking companies are also up in arms about
the scrapping the diesel rebate, right?
Yeah. So is it the nail that really puts an end to the Liberal Party? I mean, look, we're just going the way it's going at the moment, and this is between the Labs and the Libs. Yeah, it's for me, I reckon. Look, if a bit of wisdom out there. I was Albo, I'd just stay in the basement or in the garage or in the granny flat, whatever he's got in his $3 million mansion. I just stay there for the rest of the week.
He almost doesn't need to be wheeled out to say anything and just let the other guys dig their own hole, right?
Yeah, well, look, it looks like some of these companies are really not very supportive of the Liberal Party. But we're going to be talking about that. We're also going to be talking about other policies that the independents are putting out. That I thought that was an interesting discussion to be had this week. Along with some interesting things with the WeChat chatters, that's really exciting, both abroad and at home. So, we're going to be digging in a little bit deep, and perhaps we'll be digging our knees and elbows into some of these policies that have been put out there to buy our vote, Mark. Buy our vote.
Well, nobody's bought my vote yet, I have to say. I'm very unimpressed, and in fact, I've done a whole series of radio interviews today on the announcement over the weekend with regard to the first-time buyer program. You can pull it out of super and just go buy property. Whoopee! Yes, another like we said the other week, right? It was on the list. Remember the things that they would do? One of them was more incentive programs. Well, voila, you've now got it.
Yeah, more incentive. But still, I'm not hearing anything about immigration. I don't know about the channels, what you're reading or what you're hearing, but it doesn't seem like the mainstream reporters are really pressing that. Yes, we understand it. A lot of it's got to do with monetary policy, how this property bubble has just been overinflated. But at the end of the day, also that also supportive of, you've got to have the buyers. You can have all the monetary policy in the world. You can have all the low rates in the world. You can have all the cheap money in the world. But if you don't have the bodies to actually get that to buy it, well, you don't have a bubble there. So the question is obviously, where are these new comers, where are these new players coming from? And also because of the simple fact that we're also witnessing, and that is the numbers on market, Martin. They're increasing. They're going up, and they're going up a lot, faster than what buyers are materializing. So obviously becoming a very sweet spot for buyers to come into the market or monitor the market to make better informed decisions as to what they buy and when they buy and what they buy.
Yeah, well, I suspect that we won't hear anything at all about migration until after the election, and it almost doesn't matter which side gets in. One of the first levers that they will do is to pull that lever back and open the trap doors and let a few more in, right? I'm pretty sure.
B-52 bomber going over over Vietnam.
Exactly right. And, of course, New Zealand last week made their announcement. So they're basically now opening the trap doors and allowing people to come into New Zealand with certain categories of skills. They can go straight in and claim residency straight away, which means they can buy straight away. So you can see that New Zealand is already ahead of us again, right? They're pulling the migration lever. By the way, their property prices are falling quite fast now. And the IMF wrote a report on New Zealand, and they started worrying about the amount of debt and where property prices are going and all those sorts of things. And they maybe even hinted that the Reserve Bank in New Zealand may need to reverse its policies. So we'll see. But anyway, migration, yeah, it's on my list. It just won't be mentioned this side of the election because neither party wants to talk about it.
Yeah, that's right. But we spoke about what was to happen with New Zealand months ago as well, Martin, with regards to people selling up. The smarter people sold out 3-4 months ago there. And maybe even a little bit longer when we started talking about it, and we started talking about how the WeChat chatter groups there were already selling up and bringing the money over here. And the other thing that we also raised was, at the end of the day, with the devastation, the economic devastation that was happening and occurring in New Zealand because of their lockdowns, well, where's the next best place to go and get a job? Of course, Australia. And it's just a hop, skip and a jump. And a bit of a swim over the water, and lo and behold, you're in a country that's going to be welcoming anybody that's going to be renting or buying, and it's going to be putting or even starting a business if you're really that game. But we already spoke about it months and months ago. So for you and I, it's nothing new.
Old news. But the wanted warm body sign, right, hasn't yet gone up yet, but it will go quite soon, not down on the coast there. Wanted warm body, any flavour, anybody to come in to buy property, right? I reckon the only entry criteria will be, have you got enough money to buy property?
Are you willing to share a two-bedroom apartment with eight other people?
Yeah, that's right. Now, let's talk about the WeChat chat. And actually, there's some really quite serious news, isn't there?
Look, it is. And again, we brought it up. We broke it a week or two ago. Remember when Dusty and Evan posted that that snippet of some giving us an insight, although albeit it was in Chinese, but we sort of try to give a bit of a translation to it. We know there's a power struggle there in China, Xi versus Li, and so forth. And there's obviously a lot more going on behind the scenes. But one thing, some of our observations, or our WeChat chatter's observations that we've been told of what's happening there, and to bring it to our followers and our viewers, is we've got to be conscious and aware of what's happening now. Yes, there is a clampdown on people leaving China. There is a major clampdown. Passports are being literally torn up at the airport. Visas are being torn up at the airport. Documents are not being not handed back unless you've got a very valid reason. And to study overseas at the moment is not a valid reason to leave China. Because the tertiary education facilities, and also the secondary or wherever you're going to be studying, or the colleges are providing internet-based, Zoom-based learning. So therefore, online-based learning. So therefore, you don't need to really travel overseas. So this is what's happening, and this is really, a lot of knee-jerk reactions of of what you and I've talked about, but we're having, we're evolving. The mainstream pick up certain segments of it and they dramatize it. But what's really, really disturbing and should be, and our followers and our listeners should be paying a closer attention to, as you and I said, is yes, there's all these clampdowns going on now, but there's a hell of a lot of people that are very well off, that are very well connected, that can bypass a lot of these clampdowns that they're having this going. Because, I mean, we're talking about a very corrupt environment. So, you know, money talks and, you know, money can get a lot of things done. One. Secondly, the other side of this, what's happening here in China, regardless of how they're portraying it, with the Xi being, you know, mentally ill or incapacitated or whatever the news is, there's a big power struggle, which you and I spoke about before already. So that's no news to our followers and our listeners, only to the rest of the world. What's going to happen, and this is one of the clear things, is, you know, regardless of what you hear about people being stopped at the border, at the airports and so forth, you've got a lot of people, a hell of a lot of people with a lot of money that are going to be, you know, fleeing the country. Whether it's this month, next month, the month after, but come the third, fourth quarter of this year, you're going to see a lot of people coming, going all over the world from China because they're just fed up. The other side of what's happening there in China is that with this political struggle, you got to understand that the political side that loses this struggle, whether it be the Z's or whether it be the Lee's, whichever party, whichever faction loses the struggle, well, there's two alternatives for the losing side, Martin. Stay and get beaten, what they do over in the States, you know, this voluntary suicide sort of scenarios, or leave the country. Guess what they're going to be doing, Martin? They're going to be leaving the country. And this is what our viewers and what we're trying to say to people is, don't just look at what's happening now on the surface, look at the future implications, hence the reason why it's going to become sweet for whichever political party takes control moving forward from next week, because they're going to have very wealthy, highly educated people potentially coming into our shores. And guess what they're going to be doing? They're going to be bringing their money in order to settle, not short term, but long term. And what are they going to be looking for? They're going to be looking for well-established property areas, the homes, and something that they can basically call home for as long as they're going to stay here, as long as until things change, or otherwise they could go back to China. But I want to add something else to that, because I have been a lot of people send me DMs and say, oh yeah, but you're just focusing on China. We're not just focusing on China. I don't think you and I have ever said that we're just saying that that this immigration lever is just going to be a lever that's going to bring a whole bunch of people from China, because it's a whole people from the rest of the world as well that are looking at Australia as a safe haven to get away from what's happening in Europe, to get away from what's happening in the States, to get away with what's happening in Canada and anywhere else in the world. And you and I said that there's already been movement since 2019 to bring the highly skilled individuals into Australia. And guess what? What do we need right now, Martin? The newspaper, the mainstream, have been putting it out there over the weekend. There's shortages teachers, shortages of nurses, and people in the medical profession, and these people that are coming from overseas in these areas, IT as well as finance, they're not coming over to come and take advantage of any grant that the government's going to give them. They're coming over with loaded pockets, and they're ready to buy. And regardless of whether the interest rates move another 25, 30, 50, 100 points by the end of the year or by the end of 2023, it's not going to mean a lot to them when their LVRs are only going to be 30 or 40% at worst case scenario.
Absolutely. And it's just worth noting the battle in China. I mean, Li came out with a really interesting statement, which, if it's true, would suggest a complete change of attitude with regard to imports and exports from Australia. Basically, it would strangle our exports and make our imports much more difficult from China. I mean, this has the potential to really shake up the economic relationship between China and Australia, and other countries too, by the way, because basically it's now a much stronger focus on internal and effectively, you know, looking after the local economy, not actually the global trade. It's a really interesting time, and, you know, who knows how it's going to play out, but another uncertainty to add into the bucket of uncertainties that we've got.
Yeah, and so in the meantime, what the chatterers are saying, the WeChat chatterers are saying from over there, is that this isn't just going to go, this isn't going to dissipate overnight. This is going to go until I think they've got the big, I call it the big wig meeting in October, November. So it's going to play out till November. In the meantime, we're going to continue to have supply chain issues. We're going to continue to have issues with regards to raw materials for us to even manufacture or put together things here. We need the base materials that we're not going to get. Nothing's really much is going to move by way of shipping or air transport from China. So it's going to really have a greater impact, again, till the end of the year before things change, before we really know what is going to happen. But as I said, one thing for sure, and we know historically, when one faction of that party loses, the loser has got to, either they stay and bear the consequences of, what come over there, or basically leave. And these politicians and high net worth individuals that have supported that faction are going to be leaving, and more to the point because of the lockdowns and that they've also been having, no different to any other country where they've had prolonged lockdowns. And this thing's going to go on till the end of the year. So who knows how many are going to be leaving? Who knows how many can leave and will leave in the meantime as well?
Absolutely. And the local WeChat chat, it's back to the future, isn't it?
Back to the future, Martin. It's back to the 80s and early 90s, when property transactions amongst the ethnic communities were basically, were done not necessarily by way of agencies. A lot of the ethnic communities relied on their lawyers to transact property. So we're going back to that. Over the last 2 weeks, there's been a lot of noise. Over the weekend, there was a hell of a lot of noise. And what's happening is, just to bring our viewers and our followers into the picture, is a lot of properties amongst the Chinese community are being transacted over the WeChat portals. A number of reasons. One, they want to be discreet. And things can happen a lot quicker than obviously getting agents involved. By the time agents put together agency agreements and put together marketing campaigns and this and that, they feel they've got no time, so they can be both discreet and can get things done a lot quicker. The second point is obvious. They're going to be saving a lot of fees on agents' commission. Even 1% of a 2.5-3 million property, that's a hell of a lot of money. 1%, 2%, you're either talking 25,000-30,000, or you're talking $50,000 or $60,000, and that's a huge saving for somebody that wants to downsize or take the money and then have to buy in because of the buying cost. So that's obviously, they're going to be saving that, not only on the agent's commissions but also on marketing fees. That's the second reason. And overall, some feel they're going to get more for their properties. Whether you get more, whether you get less, the interesting thing for us from our position, from our perspective, is that there's a lot of properties that are now being transacted over WeChat, obviously through proper channels, legal channels, through solicitors and conveyancers and the like, but they are just not using the local agents to transact, which is what a lot of ethnic communities were doing in the 80s to early 90s.
Yeah, very interesting, and it is back to the future there. But, of course, the numbers of property on listings, well, they go up and they go up and they go up and they go up again.
Yeah, So regardless of how many properties have been transacted off market and how many are not have been taken off market because of the winter blues, as we call them, the numbers are just moving north, and it both homes and apartments. Obviously, apartments just don't retreat; they just keep on going and going and going, like a never-ready battery. The homes on market last week, if you recall, there was the mark of the beast. We started with about 7,666 last week, and this week we've got 7,000. We start the week with 7,890 homes on market. We were just a little bit above 6,000 same week last year, 2021, which is absolutely good for buyers. It's obviously going to bring there's going to be more competition because there's a lot more sellers, and buyers, obviously, with the interest rate rises, they're also being their borrowing capacity is also being reassessed. So for local buyers, there's this, as I say to a lot of people, there's a window right now where people are wanting to downsize, wanting to get out at the high before they feel they're going to continue to lose. There's all this uncertainty with the election, with everything else that's going on, interest rate rises and everything. So whilst all this is very emotional, people are walking away with, in some cases that we talk about later on with statistics, hundreds of thousands of dollars less than what people paid only last year. So that's where we are. The interesting thing for this weekend coming up, Martin, is the sale by underquoting or sale by auction. The numbers have cut down less than half than what we had last Saturday. The question is it because of the election, or is it because of the weak results of that the last, particularly the last 3 weeks, auction weak results that we had over the last 3 weeks, or is it a combination of both?
Well, it'll be interesting to see. I reckon that in 2 weeks' time, once the election is out the way, it'll be very interesting to see whether there's a spike back up in terms of actually the auctions, or whether they continue to go further down. Certainly, again, my tour of the local auctions at the weekend, it was like looking for hen's teeth, right? And there were a few auctions, but nobody turned up. Not one of them transacted. A couple of others got cancelled on the day. So the auctioneers are just walking away saying, well, there's no point, there's nobody here.
But it's flabbergasting, Mark. It really is. It baffles me to think that selling agents can be that stupid. If you know you're not going to have anybody, and they can say, oh, yeah, but we don't know who's going to turn up on the day. Yeah, piss off. That's a poor excuse of bad marketing and bad management, as far as I'm concerned. You should know, within a week of who's keen, who's going to register or not register, but to actually carry it all the way in, power obviously shows from Tom Tom's the fact that no registered bidders on the day, and it's an auctions are a pizza.
Yep. Absolutely.
Obviously, it works in the favour of buyers because it spooks the nosy bodies, the nosy neighbours that want to know what's going on, and it puts them on a tailspin if they were thinking of selling as well. But that also has counter effect of the fact that then they sort of withdraw into the shell and wait until spring. So we could be seeing a hell of a lot more listings in spring. Then, and the other thing is it's counterproductive, or they may withdraw altogether and not put the, and think about, and they'll wait another year or two before they go on market to see whether things are going to get better over time before they downsize or sell or whatever. So it's agents do it because they think that they're going to get more listings from locals and marketing, but it's counterproductive, not in this, no different to underquoting. All it does, it just gives, if somebody is serious about going on market, they look at the agency, the agent on the day, and they just say, you know what? What a fizzer. I'm certainly not going to use that person. But anyway, each to their own. We're not here to teach them how to sell. Anyway, so each to their own.
Well, I reckon they've had it so good for so long. You know, they basically just turn up and there are lots of people wanting to buy, particularly down here in the, this part of the world where a lot of people are buying from Sydney. That's all changed at the moment. People are not anywhere near as keen. And so people are getting a bit a bit shocked, you know?
Well, they also do it because they want to justify the marketing fees.
Yep.
Now, as much as we say that the average marketing fee is between $5,000 and $7,000 for an auction campaign, I can tell you, I know of certain agents, and I know of at certain times where marketing fees have flown above the $20,000 for something that could have been done for less than half. And on top of that, these marketing fees is what also funds the businesses, the agency's businesses, particularly in this type of market when the sales take longer to sell, the properties take longer to sell, or they don't get to sell the property, the property then is signed over to another agency for whatever reason. So the owners try another agency, so they don't get a commission. So it's the marketing fees that unfortunately keep these agencies alive or keep them going. And you know what? I mean, again, that's something that George is going to look into, is how marketing fees are utilized by agencies, and how the majority of agencies don't even provide statements or invoices for the fees, and that money should be put in trust accounts, but it doesn't. It goes into the general accounts, and that's how they keep their businesses going. That's the unfortunate side. That's a bad side, evil side of our industry, and that's something where the regulators have to really clamp down on, Martin. It's just unconscionable.
No, I agree. I'll tell you a little story here. When I was selling my property some years ago in Sydney, we did use an agent, and the agent suggested we should auction, which we didn't do. But he did say he would like to make a video, and you know, so we talked about it. And he said, well, you know, we can get a good video made for $10,000, $12,000, or $40,000 or whatever it was, right? I said, oh, that's fine. I'll get my camera out. So I made my own video for zero. And he had to admit it was quite good. But very interestingly, I discovered afterwards that nearly half of that cost wasn't going to the video production company. Guess where half of it was going?
It goes into the general account. It goes into the coffers. I mean, they'll charge you people that are putting the properties on the market for sale, and they get asked for a marketing fee. You've got to ask, by law, you can ask for a statement, a full statement of how the fees were transacted, and you'll see and they've got to account for every cent that you give them, and that money should be put in trust, as I said, into a trust account. But they don't. They generalize it. A number of the big players, the big franchise groups, they collect that goes into a combined account. Each office should have their own trust account, but for marketing they go into a pool, and obviously when they buy purchase signboards or the like, or ad space on different websites, they get a discount. That discount isn't passed on to the vendor like yourself. That discount is kept in the is split between the owner of the agency and the agency and the agent that's got the listing. Yeah, look, I could go on and on. It's unconscionable. It's not right, but it goes on. But that's why they've got to have these. That's why they run these auctions to the day, regardless of whether people turn up or don't turn up, whether people register or don't register. They run them because it's to justify the high fees that they charge for marketing for no other reason. But at the end, long run, it hurts them because the local potential sellers, the neighbours, will engage another agent.
Yeah, now let's go on to statistics and power. And I've solved the missing problem. Why does this property change value so much? Right, okay. Well, if you look at the square footage, right, the first time it was 265 square metres. The second time it was 266 square metres. So I reckon that square metre of land was worth a lot of money.
Yeah, look, this one stirred up a lot of, I don't know. Normally, when I get these anomalies, whether or not I'm looking in the area for clients, or we're looking in the area for clients, I normally ring up the agents and try to get a trying to get a bit of a, you know, a background story. I haven't had a chance to ring this agent, but it's an interesting one that he put up this week, and it's one of the ones that I wanted to share tonight because, yeah, and the takeaway from this is that we're seeing more and more properties on the market that were bought 1 or 2 years ago. Now, obviously, there is an upside to most of them, but there's still a downside to, you know, from the asking, the original asking to the actual transacted sale. But nevertheless, there is an upside. So a lot of people that, so, you know, in a lot of cases, it's, you know, what we call the flippers that are bought in and they went out, or somebody that just doesn't want to, that they can see the writing on the wall perhaps, and they feel that if they hold on a long term, they're going to be underwater. Well, for various reasons, what I am seeing with a number of properties that Parapower has been sharing and others that I've been noticing around the traps, separate to what he's sharing from other agents as well, I am noticing more and more that development sites are coming back on the market. When I'm say development sites, you have duplex sites or properties with that development potential that people bought. They bit more than what they could chew, and or DAs are going to be delayed, and or they can't get funding from the banks because banks are obviously tightening down on development funding as well. So all those reasons, they're coming back on, and developers and people with this sort of money, they'll lose their 10-20%. It's part of the ongoing business that they're involved in. It's a game. So we can't look at these as individual properties and say, oh shit, the market's really collapsing in that area. Now, there's a lot more to a lot of these these examples that we see online, and that people flick around from one Twitter account to another Twitter account. There's a lot more that's going on behind the scenes, and but I think people can see it, and it's, you know, it's a bit of fun watching the commentary on a lot of these posts. But this was one of the best posts for last week, so I thought I'd share it tonight.
Absolutely, no, it's very interesting, and as you say, there's always more going on below the waterline. But interestingly, I'm seeing more and more posts on Twitter, in particular, where they're actually picking the higher price then, lower price now. So, you know, one swallow may not make a summer, but when you see lots of swallows all heading in the same direction, you might conclude that maybe the markets are a little bit weaker. But anyway, you worked your magic over, just over the road down at Pymble, didn't you?
Yeah, look, I concur with your thought, with your previous statement, Martin, and I'll say, yeah, look, it is happening more and more. There are some areas where where you can see, and you talk to agents and agencies in, you know, various areas, and they'll tell you straight out, 3 months ago, 4 months ago, we would have got 10-15% more than what we're being offered now. So we can see those changes. We can see a lot of that. So I'm not denying that whatsoever. But, you know, when you see big anomalies, you just got to be careful. Is all I'm trying to say from before. But yeah, there's a lot of examples. And look, this one in Pymble, from one of our clients. This was an interesting one. And again, it's a one-off from the area. Pymble's very, very diverse. You can have 1,000 people wanting to buy a property, and they'll pay, they'll still pay 10-15% over the what we would call the market, the true market value, not necessarily the guide, but just depends, where the property's at. But this one was really interesting, because we actually got, our client actually got a legitimate bank valuation, an internal valuation, because he knows the manager of the particular branch. So he was able to obtain an official bank valuation, although it was an indicative, but nevertheless, it was more, his personal banker said to him, look, if you can get the property for $2,340,000 or below, there will be no issue with the valuation because we've already done a valuation for you. So I thought that was interesting. The guide for this property was between 2 to 2.1 was the guide. When we spoke to the agent off the record, the agent was looking for the closer to the hedonic guide, which was $2,250,000. That was the hedonic guide, and that's what the guide that she'd given her client. But we, one of our associates was able to sweet talk the agent to put in an offer at, below the 2 million, and all the stars and the moons and the planets and everything else lined up for our client on Friday the 13th, and we got it for 1,920,000. Interesting. This is the interesting point. The owner of the property is an ANZ manager that's been relocated to Singapore.
Make of that what you will.
Exactly. And we'll leave it at that.
Absolutely. Well, let's move on briefly to talk about some of these party politics. And actually, Louis Christopher did a really good post, I thought, relating specifically to ScoMo's announcement on Sunday.
Yeah, look, and that's what really then, so we'll just read out what Louis wrote in his feed. And when I saw this, I thought, wow, well, this is great. He writes, encouraging empty nesters to downsize is a small step in the right direction towards resolving our complex housing affordability issue. However, I still believe a combination of axing stamp duty plus land tax go much further in encouraging downsizing. I was reading through that. He wasn't getting much traction on it. And then I commented and said, look, speaking with agents in various areas in Sydney where the potential clients are the empty nesters, they say, yes, we want to stay in the area, but we can't find smaller suitable properties in the area. Cost of sale is too high. The commission's been charged to sell the properties too high, as well as repairs and maintenance to get the properties to a position where they're going to maximise in value, in preparation, plus commissions and marketing fees, which we've been talking about. They're just too high, and in a lot of cases, very prohibitive. And that's what we're getting from a lot of these areas with the bigger homes, and the empty nesters want to move out. Another account, Don't Buy Now. Yeah, they're right. Add to that, no sane person will sell up to go into aged care, and that is true to a lot of ethnic communities, Mark.
Yeah.
A lot of the ethnic communities don't want to put their elderly parents in aged care because one, the aged care that would cater for them according to their needs is miles away, is a long way away. They're not within the community. And if they do have one within that community, guess what? The waiting list, is as long as my place to your place, in a single file. Obviously following COVID 1.5 meter distancing standards. So it's very long, and people don't want to move away. So that's very, that happens a lot in the Asian communities as well as the Italian communities. So this is the problem. Then obviously from that, I thought, you know what, let's look at the different policies that the different parties are putting out there, and I thought we'd have a quick discussion on some of the ones that I outlined from the Liberal Party right up to the Liberal Democrats to the Greens and everybody else. So what do you reckon?
Well, yeah, certainly, Kiel. We're not sure we'll do justice to all of the policies, but I mean, it's the bottom line is pretty much no party has actually done anything strategic, other, I would say, than the New Liberals. The New Liberals, with Steve Keen, has actually tabled a strategic policy document relating to housing and property, which is quite radical in its idea. But apart from that, I don't see any other thing that's trying to deal with it strategically. So pretty much all the other parties are just sort of a bit more or less elastoplast and sticking plaster and string and bit of wire over here to try and just sort of mess around the edges, right? Is how I read it.
Yeah, well, look, that's right. Look, I was going to comment on one of the videos I saw from the New Liberals, but I think we'll leave that one out. I don't want to get.
You mean when it was underwater?
Hi, yes. I thought he was. I started watching it after I was reading Tarek's auction clearance rates, and I didn't recognise who it was because I wasn't really paying attention. And I said, "Oh shit! Look at that! It's a Ray White real estate agent talking about the market and going underwater. I wanted to find Tom Panos's advice. I turned the sound on and I realized it was a political campaign. It was fun. You had to be there, Martin. Had to be there. That meant to Stephen Keane or the leader of the New Liberals. But it was an interesting ad.
I'll tell you what. Victor Klein is coming on the show tomorrow, my live show tomorrow, to talk about few things, so I might get his story from the inside. I wonder how soggy he got.
Look, it was interesting. You can mention what I said. Mm. It was all in jest, and I'm sure he's a big boy. He's not going to take it to heart. But look, you just got to watch that with sound off and not watch the end, and you swear it was a Ray White real estate agent talking about the market. People going underwater if they don't sell now. Anyway, the Liberal Party, Mark. The Liberal Party. Let's talk about them. The Liberal Party. You got the super. What would you call it? An incentive, a motivation to buy. You can withdraw your super up to 50,000, I believe. You got the 20%. As far as I'm concerned, it's a loan. Nothing other than it's nothing other than a loan. And obviously, you got no stamp duty, grants, and other bits and pieces.
Well, yeah, you've got the continuation of the existing programs of the government-backed difference between 80 and 95 or 98%, right? So that continuing that, and it's interesting. If you go back 3 years, you might recall that the Prime Minister actually gave an address at his last rally before the last election, and one of the things he said was, "Prices will be higher under us," right? And I'll remind you that he's allowed around 300,000 people to sort of get into the market, right, through these various schemes. What's happened to prices? They've gone up dramatically, right? So it's interesting that his plans or schemes or whatever you want to call them over the last 3 years, and oh, sure, there was COVID and there was low interest rates, but the net effect is prices were a lot higher. So it's interesting that they're saying, well, none of these are going to actually make prices go higher. Well, actually, that wasn't the experience over the last 3 years, so why would it be different this time?
I've been talking to our obviously our associates and friends and that, and the bandwidth between the bandwidth between your 700 to a million, if this became policy and became concrete. And people could pull the super out if they're in charge moving forward. Well, we're of the opinion that obviously it's going to increase that entry level that most of the first home buyers are wanting to get into. That is going to inflate the price by another 10, if not 15%. It's not going to. I don't feel personally, although my other colleagues are bit of a different opinion, but I don't feel that it's going to affect the higher, anything above your 2 million and above, because obviously they're not, that's not your first home buyer belt. Now, that's outside of our levers that you and I talk about, with immigration, that. But I do strongly feel that this is really not helping the majority, the bigger group of the first home buyers that want to come in between your 700 to 2 million belt. All that's going to do is going to inflate, and that's without any other influence, without any other monetary policy influence, without any other influence. And I dare say that even if rates went up another 25, 50 basis points, I dare say a rate rise with these handouts that the Liberal Party are proposing, I'd say that would, at worst, it would just basically keep it at it'll plateau. It'll flatline. Obviously, it'll have a much greater impact on more valuable property. That's a different story altogether. But unfortunately, where you really wanted to hit home, where you really the people that you really want to help out, are the people that are going to be worse off. Then, as to your point that you mentioned earlier on, Martin, the bigger group again of the 300,000 people that were able to buy under the the schemes, you've got to keep those prices afloat, because if you don't, and then they're in deep trouble, because prices suddenly drop, and anybody wants to come in again, what policy? There's no policy that's going to work if prices start dropping, at a great, very rapidly. So
I agree. Two quick points on that. The 50K or 20%, right? Well, let's just say 50K. So you can get an additional 50K out of your super, right, and put it in towards a deposit. Because it's 20% yours and 80% the bank's in terms of the mortgage, that means you can borrow probably an extra $200,000, right?
That's right.
Which is why we would argue that the prices will pick up roughly by that, because every time people can borrow more, because it's credit driven, prices go up. But the other interesting observation is that a lot of people in the group, the age group that will be looking to go in there, won't have that big a value in their superannuation fund.
No, that's correct.
Right,
that's correct.
It's more likely to going to be between 20,000 and 30,000, and what that basically, because it's up to 40%. So what that basically means is, this is all splash and no sausage, right? This is political, in my view.
Yeah, well, that's it. It's all sizzle, no sausage.
No, I think splash.
All tomato sauce.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I'm relatively skeptical. I made a couple of radio appearances today. And the other one, the superannuation one, is there, because the other superannuation one is the top end, where effectively if you sell and get out above 55, then you can put $300,000 into super. But as Louis Christopher said, well, actually, the big barrier is not that. The big barrier is the cost of transacting. Because if you're going to buy something else, then you've got to pay stamp duty and everything else. And in fact, again, in my surveys, there are a lot of people who just are not able and willing to transact at the top end. The superannuation hook is really not going to be a very big one for them. So, again, I don't think this is actually that material either.
No, and it's the transaction costs of downsizing is that you still want to add value to the property, or do give it a quick makeover in order to maximize the sale. So there's those costs apart from the commission and the marketing fees, and obviously the stamp duty on the way in when you buy. But added to that point, and we'll move on from that, is people don't want to. They don't want to leave miles away from where they've been living for the last 30, 40 years.
Correct. That's exactly right. And that's the problem, because they won't be able to find anything in a similar area of much cheaper, right? Unless you maybe find a small apartment somewhere. So from a sort of a realism point of view, doesn't really work. Now, what about One Nation, though? Because One Nation says, well, no more foreigners should buy, right? And they're mirroring, of course, what Canada has announced recently, where Canada's basically stopped foreigners from buying into the property market.
Yeah, well, it's just one of those. I'm sure it resonates with a lot of people, and a lot of people can be pissed off with it. I would say scale it back. Let's put it back on how it used to be pre-2013.
Yeah.
Where we couldn't sell more than 22% of a development of a medium density or high density development to foreigners. So that would be it worked fine until then everything could be sold to anybody and every man and his dog. The other thing that I would say to that is, you've got to obviously police. You can say you as a person, as an individual, can't buy it being a foreigner. But if you set up a company, you can be the director or the beneficiary of a company by way of a trust. So, it's fun and games. And there's a lot. But look, I still think that's got some legs.
And am I right in thinking it was Labour, wasn't I, who actually changed the foreign...
How dare you, Martin? How dare you? Last time I said that, I got crucified on the comments on the video when I said that 2 years ago. God almighty, I didn't want to bring it up. That Mr. Bob Carr, bought about all these all these issues that we're facing. Anyway, let's move on, Martin. Let's move on. I don't want to get crucified again on the comms.
Very well. What about capped 3% mortgage rates then? There you go. That's the UAP contribution to the debate. They're becoming a quasi reserve bank, clearly, you know, basically using taxpayer money to keep interest rates artificially low. Oh, it's been done before, you know.
Yeah, well, and exactly. And I guess what they're saying really is they're saying, well, you know, if the current governments can piss up so many trillions of dollars against the wall, hey, we might as well, you know, new gardens. I don't know. And it's
well, yeah, I mean, there are some economic questions as to how feasible it is, you know, if international rates go a lot higher, then effectively the cost to taxpayers would be higher and higher and higher and higher, right? And the other point there is that the net effect would be effectively taxpayers' money flowing from taxpayers to those with mortgages to make up the difference. So I'm not sure that it's that realistic, particularly given the economic situation that we're in with higher rates probably coming. But yeah, that was interesting. You know, that might get a bit of airplay, actually. I think a lot of people would like to see something which really caps the mortgage rate, because for many people, the worry at the moment is rates are going to go a lot higher.
Yeah, well, that's right. I guess they're playing on the proviso that the simpler you keep it, you know, if it's a one liner or one point, the more people are going to remember.
But interesting question to me is, does it include investors or not? I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, it's sometimes it, like, you know, it's like what a lot of politicians tend to do. The less they say, the more votes they get.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, maybe they should just go stand in the corner and not say anything. Maybe that would be. Now, Labour, of course, it's got the joint venture scheme for 10,000. Not a big number, you know, that has proven to be quite successful in Western Australia and also in the UK. But it is weird, because basically what it means is you only own half the property, and there's still some vagary as to, well, when would you need to buy the other half? So, for example, would you be forced to if your income started to rise, for example? It looks as though that's possibly one of the things in there.
Who takes the hit on the way down? Have you got permissions to renovate? And who pays for it? Is it still a 50-50 or 60-40? JV, and do you have to make an application like you would if you wanted to renovate your bathroom in a strata complex? What are the add-ons? Public servants that the taxpayer again is going to be paying in order to police all this?
Absolutely. If you want to renovate, what about the quality of the renovation? Who's going to determine the colour of the the colour of the bathroom suite? I mean, like, you know, it's serious.
Yeah, we can go on and on. Yeah, well, yeah, another dead duck. Yeah.
So then we've got the Greens, right? The throwaway line, 1 million new homes, I think, over the next 10 years is their plan. Mind you, there's no details, as I could see. I went and had a look on the website. There ain't a lot there.
Adam won't come on our show. I don't know.
We invited him, didn't we?
Yeah, exactly. Look, I think it would have been a lot more credible if you said, 975,000 or 975,250, something like that. I would have taken it. I would have thought to myself, shit, they've done some mathematics. There's something behind this. But to just come up with a million, it's like, it's just one of those throwaway lines.
And we're not sure what type of homes, where they're going to be, who's going to build them, could you get the materials to build them, could you get the labour force to build them, all of those questions.
What LGA is going to forego their build, knock down their buildings, or all sorts of infrastructure complications. But look, at least he's saying they're going to build, which is part of what Louis is also saying, what I also agree on, and that is that, yeah, we can throw all these things at the you can throw numbers and money and gold and silver and whatever else you want to throw at all these policies and to get them started. But nobody's talking about homes or building sustainable proper dwellings, other than the Greens. At least they've got one piece of the puzzle. Yes. They're actually talking about building new homes, whereas the rest is just throwing money and yet not talking about new homes, new dwellings, sustainable, environmentally friendly, solar powered, and everything else that goes with it, sustainable, efficient, the whole bit. But yeah, we are in a situation where you've got a huge amount of influence from local governments, the LGAs, and there's so much red tape that you've got to jump hoops, and other developers are going to be willing to do something, because they're not going to be wanting to move unless there's the rule of thumb is the land is a third, construction is a third, and the profit should be a third. But so what are you going to get developers that are going to be working as employees of the government to build? Mm. Because for starters, they're not going to get the funding unless there's at least there's minimum 25% profit in it at under gross realization of a development. So if the banks can't see it, they're not going to get the funding. So yeah, there's a lot more, but at least they're talking about building something, because nobody else is talking about building other than everybody's going to be buying what's already existing. It's only going to inflate prices even more.
Yeah, well, I had the idea that what they should do is build their 1 million homes all in Tasmania. Plenty of land there, low population.
Simpson Desert.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. And then you can power it with all the green power that they've got down there, right? And, Bob's your uncle.
Bob's your uncle. And if you really want to go, 50% to Tasmania and 50% out in the Simpson Desert. Look, if the Mormons could do it, well, it's a Utah, wasn't it? The Mormons could do it, could build a whole bloody state and infrastructure and everything in the desert. I'm sure we can. I mean, that was what, 150 years ago, or 250 years ago. I'm sure that would be
able to do it.
And as with all the, with all, I'm sure we could do it. I mean,
And we're just, the new Liberals with Steve Keen's policy is essentially to say, well, the problem is debt. We've had too much debt, and property prices follow debt, so you've got to deal with debt, right? So basically he's got a strategy to essentially take the debt out of the system, which means that people will owe less, the property prices will settle, and basically says, well, that means that we can actually take a one step back and get property prices back to a more normal level and go on. And actually, I have to say that his policy paper, which you can see on his website, is actually the most detailed piece of work from any political party that I've seen on this in a generation. So kudos to them. Interestingly, it's got quite a lot of interest, not just in Australia, but around the world as well, in terms of other people looking at how to break out of this doom loop where effectively property prices go up because you can get bigger mortgages because you can borrow more because property prices go up. So you've got this sort of spiraling process, and this is a way of trying to break that nexus. So at least kudos to Steve and the New Liberals for giving it a go.
Look, and I agree with you on that again, Martin. It's something that they're addressing, something that's you can't get rid of a tumor of a cancerous growth by just putting a band-aid on it. And a lot of these other policies are band-aids. I'm not saying all, but a lot, particularly from
well, I'd actually argue that some of those band-aids probably are as infected as the wound itself. So basically, you're just spreading the problem.
Those band-aids come at a bigger price than the solution, than the operation to get rid of the growth.
Exactly,
those elixirs that the snake sells.
The snake oil salesman,
like those elixirs. They do you more harm than what they're meant to.
Absolutely. And Edwin, there's a serious point here. A lot of those policies from the other parties will actually make the situation worse, right? So it might drag a few more people in, but remember, it's a Ponzi scheme, right? They have to keep pulling people in the bottom to be able to keep this thing alive. So that's the problem.
You need it. You need it. So that people then can withdraw from, can withdraw equity from the principal place of residence to start up a business, to spend, and you know, because you I guess you can't afford to not to have any discretionary you know, funds around to go and buy, but you know, as I said, buy shit rather than buying essentials. It's crazy. You got to keep it going. Come on.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the music can't be allowed to stop, because if it stops, everything grinds to a halt. And then we've got the Liberal Democrats who've, well, you know, easy, just cut government spending, cut taxes.
I like that, man. Come on. You got to give them credit. I like that. When I was reading, yeah, one of the Twitter sent me that that infographic there, and that was, my eyes just went straight for that. Part of it. Yeah, cut government spending by 10%. Yeah, stuff it. Cut it by 25%. Cut government spending by 10% and cut government and wages, politicians' wages by 25%. And I think that we'll have a lot more to put into infrastructure to then be able to build, to do away with some of these bullshit policies and government and local LGA, governances that they have in place just to skim money and skim and go off on their little trips as well, because it's the government, what's the best way to put it? It's just the, you know, at every level of government, from local to state to federal to, you know, to whoever else is pulling their strings, it's just getting a slice of the pie, and at the end the young families, as I keep on saying, and the people that want to come into the market, the first time buyers particularly, they just get that their slice of pie just gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and next thing you know, they're living in a container, on top of my chook farm, or on top of my chook pen or something like that. It's crazy stuff what's going on. But look, I liked it. I put it out there. Cut taxes and cut government spending, because there's in terms of from a property policy that we've shared, and I'll share a bit more in the next podcast, the outline of what it costs to buy land and to build, and how much of that from the purchasing of the land to the actual finishing of construction, how much of that is, the percentage is incredible. It's over 35-40% goes out by way of taxes, duties, and everything else that the politicians get along the way.
Absolutely, and I'll just remind everybody that gross debt from governments close to $1 trillion, or projected to be, right? And over the last 2 or 3 years, a lot of great swathes of the money went into sections of the economy that didn't need it. That includes a lot of big end companies that got JobKeeper when they didn't need it, for example, and never paid it back. And of course, there were the old rorts.
Right? The old rorts
from sports.
And who got a pay rise in these 2 years? What industry? What sector of the community of the work?
Let me guess. Politicians.
That's right. There was only wasn't it in New South Wales, only one politician didn't get a pay rise, and there was a big hurrah about that one politician. Oh my God, the world's going to fall apart.
I know. It is pretty shocking. So the fact is that they look after themselves and they look after their colleagues. It is taxpayers' money. And the question I keep asking everybody is, just think what you could have done if you'd actually took that $1 trillion and spent it differently, right? You know, you could have actually had your 1 million homes built. You could have actually done a lot of other infrastructure builds. There could have been so much of a different outcome. We could have had schools working and we could have had hospitals working. But no, decisions were taken by politicians to essentially throw money in that direction rather than that direction. And unfortunately, nobody helps them to account. And I think that's a big, 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 big problem. So I guess when you come to voting, it's worth just reflecting on some of these things, right? And so
that's the tip of the week, Martin.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, don't fall for the traps. Don't fall for the traps when you're voting, when you go out and vote. And don't fall for the traps at auctions, because we're getting a surge at auctions of dummy bidders, I posted out some of that on Twitter. There's a lot of commentary about that. I think I'm attending an auction in the eastern suburbs in 2 weeks' time, where there's a serial dummy bidder that's actually, get this, it is reported, it is alleged that he is paid by not only one, but by multiple agencies in that area. And I hope he's there, because I will have one of my assistants with me, and I will be asking him some questions, and I'll put it on Twitter. So be careful, don't, you know, of the traps when you see agents on the phone and at auctions, or, you know, so-called bids. Just stay frosty, stay calm, don't panic. If it's not on the market, you know, and you're not the first bidder, or, you know, first cab off the rank, then just hold your bid until the property is on the market. And if it's on the market at the price point that you want to pay, or below the price point that you want to pay, well, chime in then. But until then, don't hold it, stay frosty, and also be careful when you go out and vote.
Yeah, good advice, Edwin. Thanks once again. Always great to catch up with you. And we'll do it all again next week.
We will. And the invitation's gone out to Tom, Martin.
Okay, good.
Gone out to Tom. It's let's hope he comes on. And obviously, I'll also reach out to the tenants' union and see if they come on, because I think
it'd be good. I'm doing a series of shows over the next 2 or 3 weeks relating specifically to the rental sector, so it would fit in very well with some of the other things I'm going to talk about, because I don't believe that the rental sector has been given enough airplay. Certainly through the election campaign, no one's talking about it. No. But more generally, there are a whole bunch of questions that need to be asked. In fact, I released a show yesterday on my rental stress maps, which showed just how bad it is. 2 million households in rental stress across the country, rising very quickly. And, you know, nobody wants to talk about this stuff. So we'll be able to actually help get some of those issues out on the table too. So look forward to it.
Yeah, same here. I hope they do, one of the two take up our invite, and we're able to talk to them and do a live show with them. Much appreciated. Thanks again, Martin, and all the best for this week.
Take care. See ya. Bye-bye.